This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Welcome to the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1. My name is Raymond Grenfell. Joining me is Brent Jones. How's it going, Brent?
Very well, Ray. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, good. Good to be back after a couple of weeks off.
You rested? You restored?
Well, not really. Never. This is what happens when you get into your mid-late 30s. I'm sure it just, you know, that's life. But before we get started, a huge, huge thank you to Jeff for another superb edition of On The Record. It's always such a pleasure having Jeff bring in the On The Record on a Monday. But of course, you can catch On The Record every weekday here at RTRFM from 9 in the a.m. As I said, this is the Indie Media Show. It's all the news, interviews, views, that kind of thing from the open publishing wires of the interwebs. And we're going to be talking a little bit about the interwebs or the internet or, you know, our digital lives that we all very much lead these days, whether we want to or not. We're going to be chatting a bit about the Surveillance Legislation Amendment Identify and Disrupt Bill 2021 that was passed by the Australian government back in August. It has a lot of implications for our digital rights and our civil liberties, and many groups have been raising concerns about it and what it means, particularly for people engaged in political activism or perhaps engaged with their trade union or environmental movements, that kind of thing. So a little later in the show, we're going to be speaking to one of the groups that's been making a lot of noise about it and raising concerns about it, and that's Electronic Frontiers Australia. We're going to be speaking to Justin Warren, who is a board member for the EFA.
And we're also going to be talking to Protect Our Water Alliance, doing some activist work over in Wollongong with Longwall coal seam mining beneath Greater Sydney's water catchments, just to find out where they're at and what they're dealing with and how they're dealing with it.
And you're listening to the Indie Media Show with Ray, Brent and Brahma with you until 12 o'clock this Monday morning.
Yeah, and joining us on the line is a spokesperson, Kay, from the Protect Our Water Alliance in Wollongong, New South Wales. Morning, Kay. How are you going?
Good morning. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm fantastic, thank you. So can you tell us a little bit about what's been going on in the Greater Sydney water catchment areas and coal seam mining?
Yeah, sure. So the Greater Sydney water catchment, which supplies water to the 5.5 million people of Greater Sydney, is protected on the surface. So we can't actually walk into the catchment in case we're carrying bacteria or, you know, germs or fungus on our shoes. But it's not protected beneath the surface. And so there are actually four underground coal mines that are operating in the Greater Sydney water catchment.
And longwall mining is obviously a method that has some nasty side effects, such as subsidence, surface to steam fracturing. What do those terms mean?
Yeah, so longwall mining is the most destructive form of mining that's going on in the catchment. There is also less destructive mining, bord and pillar mining. But because there's so much mining in the catchment, they're both current and historical, there's a lot of damage that is occurring. And so typically the kind of damage we see is fracturing of the rock beneath the ground when the miner goes through to take the coal out. And those fractures can actually interconnect and reach up and reach the surface. They damage aquifers. And they allow the water, which is falling on the surface at the on the water catchment land, to leach down through the cracks and into the mines. then the mines pump that water out. And so then it's like a teacup. If you pour water into a teacup and there are cracks in the bottom, then water will start to leach out at the bottom. And, you know, slowly but surely that process is leading to drying out on the surface. It's leading to draining of creeks, rivers and swamps. And that desiccation also harms biodiversity there, all of the animals and birds and frogs, you know, reptiles are being affected by the desiccation, which is being caused by mining. And, of course, it also increases the bushfire risk because the land above the mines is drier. And it can cause contamination of the water, which is actually flowing into our reservoirs. Just as an example, I had the good fortune to visit one of the areas which had been undermined in the Warrenora catchment. It had been undermined by Peabody's Metropolitan Mine. And one of the streams that we came across, which flows into the Warrenora drinking water reservoir, was actually bright orange in places. It was just psychedelic orange. Nothing was living in there. And this is because minerals are being dissolved from the rocks as a result of the cracking and exposing of those rock surfaces due to the underground mining.
Kay, everywhere around Australia since the COVID-19 crisis, we've really seen state and federal governments really push for an expansion of mining. I mean, this is despite a lot of the environmental and social concerns around different types of mining. Has this been the same in Wollongong? I mean, I understand there's been ongoing issues there for a long time now, but have we recently seen an expansion of the industry and therefore an expansion of the impacts on the local environment?
Mining has been going on in Wollongong for a long time. What we have seen recently, and I just add that, you know, mining 100 years ago with the people going with spades and wheelbarrows and donkeys down the pits, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about really destructive mining. And certainly it seems to have sped up government approvals and entertainments of mining expansions seem to have sped up in this area. It's really a worry given that in making these approvals of new coal mines, they're locking in greenhouse gas emissions for, you know, for centuries to come, millennia to come. It's a real concern.
The deadline for approvals on Russell Vale coal mine is being pushed back. I think the last update I read was the 31st of August 2021. Is that now been approved and has operations started at Russell Vale?
Yeah, unfortunately, the Minister for the Environment, Susan Ley, gave the final approval to the Russell Vale mine expansion. So Russell Vale has started to ramp up its production and it will be emitting over 11 million tonnes of CO2 equivalent through its mining and burning coal. And, yeah, we're expecting similar problems with fracturing of rock strata and aquifers. It's not longwall mining, it's bord and pillar mining, so it would be less destructive than the longwall mining one would expect. However, at Russell Vale, they're mining a third seam of coal underneath two previously mined seams, and so there is the risk of destabilising the overlying already mined coal seams, and through that increased risk that there'll be collapse and that the subsidence and cracking will reach the surface.
Kay, we've recently seen somewhat of I guess you might want to call it an explosion of activism and activity around climate change with the Student Strike for Climate movement and groups such as Extinction Rebellion and so forth taking action around Australia and, of course, around the world. Now, of course, I understand there's a whole diversity of concerns in regard to coal seam mining and the impacts on the catchments, but I guess climate change, and as you mentioned there, the increased locking in of greenhouse gas emissions and so forth is one of those, I guess, aspects to what you guys are doing. But in terms of the Protect Our Water Alliance, have you seen a bit of a resurgence of activism? And how is, do you think there's a bit of a movement growing in terms of confronting this industry there in Wollongong and I guess also elsewhere around the country?
Oh, absolutely. And Russell Vale was significant because it was the first mine approved by the Federal Minister for Environment, Susan Ley, following the Sharma case. I'm not sure if you're aware, but this was a case brought by teenagers to try to... And the courts actually found that the Minister for Environment needs to consider her duty of care and to prevent harm to young people and to children and teenagers when she approves coal mines. So, I mean, that was a very good finding, but the Minister for the Environment is challenging it in court. She's choosing the coal barons over protecting the kids of now and of the future. So Russell Vale was the first approval she made after this this finding, this court decision, and her announcement of her appeal. So people here, I think, you know, and young people especially, are really incredibly frustrated. And a number of groups have got together and have been carrying out action. So some friends of Protect Our Water Alliance started the Stop Russell Vale Mine campaign. And the very first day that we were allowed out of lockdown in Greater Sydney at 7 a.m. in the rain, in freezing cold, some good people from Stop Russell Vale Mine campaign were blockading the mine at the gates. So I think people are just fed up and can see that our federal government is not doing, is just missing in action, doesn't have a sensible plan to reduce emissions, and is so frustrated by this approval of more and more coal mines by the federal government. You know, and the coal companies are just, they can see the end in sight, and they're going to try and go through and rip out as much coal as they possibly can while they can. People are just fed up with that, and therefore, yeah, a number of groups have organised and are organising actions here in Wollongong.
And we're talking to Kay Osborne from Protect Our Water Alliance in Wollongong. Kay, you mentioned there, obviously, that there's a number of direct actions that are being taken at a grassroots level over there. What can people do here in Western Australia or anyone else listening in other parts of the country to show their support and get involved with a really important cause?
Yeah, so in terms of getting involved with Protect Our Water Alliance, you can go to our website, and so it's Protect Our Water Alliance. org, and you can sign up there for newsletter. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We've got t-shirts, and people who are in Wollongong specifically, or Greater Sydney, we have fortnightly meetings, and there's heaps of stuff going on. We really need good people who can do stuff. We've got letterboxing, researching, organising events. This Thursday, there's a demo in Wollongong at the Wollongong Coal AGM. And so there's information about that on our Facebook page. And people can also like and follow the Stop Russell Vale Mine campaign on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and sign up for newsletters at www.com. www.stoprussellbaumine.org. So that's about the mines, mining the water catchment in Greater Sydney. But I think people, you know, almost wherever you are in Australia are being touched by the fossil fuel industry and the incredible power of the fossil fuel industry and our government, you know, making decisions which are not in the public interest, that are in the interest of the fossil fuel industry and corporate donors. So, you know, you could also just getting involved with local groups in your area that are fighting extractive industries. Really good ones like Lock the Gate Alliance, you know, virtually countrywide. And then you can, you know, join with like-minded people in your community and do great things so that we can have a better, protect our environment and have a better future.
Awesome. Thanks, Kay. We really appreciate you taking the time today to let us know what's going on, and best of luck in your important fight over there. Thank you.
Thanks very much. It's lovely to talk to you.
No worries. All the best.
All the best. Bye-bye.
You're on the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1. You're on the Indie Media Show with Ray, Brent and Brahma. Brahma's in the studio keeping up the positive vibes. We're with you until 12 o'clock when Rianne Toronto is going to take you out to lunch. Back in August, the Australian Parliament passed the Surveillance Legislation Amendment Identify and Disrupt Bill 2021, prompting many civil liberties groups, digital rights advocacy groups and others to voice many concerns about the implications for our civil liberties here in Australia. It's really the latest in a wave of legislation that looks at controlling, monitoring and surveilling our online lives. But to find out about the bill and what the potential implications are for our digital rights and civil liberties, a little earlier today I caught up with Justin Warren from Electronic Frontiers Australia, and I started by asking Justin exactly what is the Surveillance Legislation Amendment Identify and Disrupt Bill 2021, and what are some of the implications for our digital rights?
Okay, well, the short version of the bill is that it grants additional powers to enforcement agencies, so police, ASD, the ACIC and the Australian Federal Police. It's sort of three broad categories. One is called data disruption warrants, which enables AFP and ACIC to access data on one or more computers and perform disruption activities, as it's called, to frustrate the commission of various activities. The second class of warrants is called a network activity warrant, which enables them to collect intelligence on networks and people doing things online. And the third class is a thing called account takeover warrants, which gives the police the ability to, for example, impersonate you on Twitter or Facebook or something like that.
Now, the government already has a bunch of these powers. The telecommunications and other legislation amendment passed back in a couple of years ago, back in 2018, already gave the AFP and ACIC access to encrypted data to observe and collect evidence online in order to prosecute criminal activity. What justification has the government used for these expanded powers, and how do they differ from this previous bill?
Well, you see, there's a lot of criming, and the criming continues to occur because crime. That appears to be the level of justification. Essentially, what we have is yet another example of authorities coming in with the usual triad of things that are bad, you know, terrorists and pedophiles and drug dealers and general criminal stuff, which is bad, and we need to do something about it. Here is something, therefore we have to do this. The solution to things is always to add more cops and more power, and that is the level of justification that has been provided.
Certainly, and this really seems to be just the latest wave. As I mentioned there, the Telecommunications and Other Legislation Amendment Act, but there's also, of course, 2015, the Data Retention Bill, what really began this sort of this hyper-legislation of cyberspace. I guess, looking at the potential implications for civil liberties, there would be, you know, many people would say, well, look, you know, if you do nothing wrong, then, you know, that you've got nothing to worry about. But what, I guess, what should we really be worried about in terms of these powers and the amount of control that this gives the state in terms of our civil liberties and our online activities?
Yeah, so firstly, that little trope of if you've done nothing wrong, you have nothing to hide is obviously it's nonsense. And it's extremely frustrating when people trot out that line because there are many reasons why we want to keep our activities private. For example, you don't go around giving everybody your banking details because someone will try to steal all of your money. Someone who says they have nothing to hide cannot be trusted to keep your secrets. And we see plenty of government officials are very, very keen on secrecy. Cabinet confidentiality, for example, is very, very important. We have ministers constantly claiming public interest immunity. So they do understand that the privacy is important in certain circumstances because they love to use it themselves. There are plenty of reasons why privacy is important. And the main one is that by default, no one else has any right to know what you're doing. You should not accept that it is a right for everyone else to always know your business all the time. It simply isn't. Our default state of being is to have privacy. Privacy is a human right. And that's one of the concerns that we have with this bill, is that it is yet another example of additional powers being granted to authorities that further erode our human rights, our right to privacy, our right to just have the government leave us alone most of the time, because most of us, most of the time, aren't doing anything wrong at all. So the police should just leave us alone. But in this case, what we have is just police constantly suspicion. There's this constant suspicion that someone somewhere is doing something wrong, so we have to watch everyone all the time because it might be you. And we should absolutely reject that way of running our society. Australia is supposed to be a liberal democracy, so we should start to act like it.
We're speaking to Justin Warren, who is a board member of Electronic Frontiers Australia. Justin, this is all happening, I guess, in the context of the us all trying to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. During this phase, there's been a huge shift to, I guess, online services, and I guess that's totally understandable, and that's obviously happening all around the world. It does seem, however, that governments are using this period to really justify a lot of these, these amendments and these sort of security legislation and so forth. Do you see, a direct connection between how states are responding to the COVID-19 crisis and the introduction of these bills, or is it purely sort of coincidental and just a matter of where we're at in terms of our sort of technological evolution?
Well, never let a good crisis go to waste, as they say. No, in fact, I don't actually think this has anything much to do with COVID-19 because this has been going on for 20 years. It's just another case of happening. It's particularly prevalent around election time. It's always good to scare people into thinking that there's a terrorist under every bed and we need to do some more and give us more power because we'll keep you safe. There is possibly a little bit of correlation in that people are more trusting of authoritarianism during periods of strife. That's one reason why authoritarians love to try to scare people a lot, because then they look for an authority figure or a big strong man to keep them safe. So if people are already afraid of something, i.e. a global pandemic, then yes, there is possibly a certain amount of capitalisation going on there. But really, it's just it's just more of the same sort of thing that we've been seeing for many years. More and more power being granted to these agencies with less and less oversight.
Justin, you mentioned earlier that we supposedly live in a liberal democracy. Here at Indie Media, we often speak to people who are involved in issues of social, economic or environmental justice. And of course, you know, there are many, many reasons why people might be politically active, whether that be in their own trade unions or in environmental movements. We've seen recently the school strike for climate and all the kids getting out on the street trying to encourage our government to act on climate change. What implication do you think this latest Identify and Disrupt bill has for activists, particularly given that so much political activism happens on corporate social media and within that world of I guess, platform capitalism? What kind of implication does this bill have for, I guess, people involved in activism in Australia?
Well, we've already seen various moves to marginalise or indeed even outlaw protests, particularly environmental protests. You can tell when something's working because the government tries to make it illegal. The risk here is that essentially there's a lot of discretion around what constitutes the kind of behaviour that should be monitored. So in this case, again, I'll have to go and check the specifics of the legislation because it is quite complicated, but in many cases it is actually illegal to disclose the existence of some of these warrants. So the fact that so much of this is happening online makes it much, much easier for authorities to monitor. If you're communicating with your fellow activists using mechanisms that are online, say Facebook or particularly anything that's not encrypted, you're doing that remotely, but the police can also just listen in. They can join your Telegram group. They could join the same Discord. They can, particularly with this warrant, they could actually take over the account of someone who you thought was one of your friends, and actually you're now talking to a policeman about how you're going to be planning your next protest, for example. So there's a lot of potential here for police to use these powers to spy on activists and to disrupt those groups. And there is a long history of authorities doing that, going back to the civil rights movement in the United States and the actions of the FBI. We have more recent examples almost every couple of months. We have an example of police officers abusing the power that they have, such as looking people up in their computerized databases to see if, you know, doing a license plate match or just looking up to see if they had a record because a policeman has seen some cute girl and he wants to check up whether or not he should ask her out. This happens. So we expect that these powers, any time there is a power that is granted, it is going to be abused. Sooner or later, it will be abused. What we need to understand is whether or not the risk of that abuse is worth it, and what happens if and when that power is abused.
Finally, Justin, I mentioned at the start of the interview that this the Surveillance Legislation Amendment, Identify and Disrupt Bill 2021, was passed back in August. As I said, it's unfortunately, obviously not within certain communities, of course, like the EFA, but unfortunately many people are just totally unaware of the bill itself. Where does it leave us now, given that the bill has passed? Is there any room for amendments? Is there any room for, you know, trying to, I guess, repeal this legislation? And I guess, where do you see things sitting politically in terms of what people who are concerned about this and other legislation can do to ensure their civil liberties and ensure that we maintain this liberal democracy here in Australia?
Get involved is really the thing to do. So, I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't say come and join EFA. But it's not just about joining organisations like EFA or Digital Rights Watch or any of our other friends like this. It's mostly about getting involved and turning up. We need politicians to understand that there will be consequences to them politically when they make decisions that go against what we as a society want. Until we turn up and tell them loudly no, they will keep doing this sort of thing. We do know that collective action works because we've seen it work. The outcry against RoboDebt, for example, has resulted in that system being shut down. They're still trying to do the same sort of thing in other ways, so we still need to keep turning up. This is a long, arduous fight where we have to continue to show up day after day. This isn't something which is a one and done, everything solved forever. In terms of the legislation, yes, we can repeal it. Laws are written by people and laws can be unwritten by people. We could pass, for example, a Human Rights Act. We could have a Bill of Rights like other liberal democracies have. Australia is almost unique among the Western democracies that it doesn't have a Bill of Rights. And that would assist us in many ways to provide some fundamental protections for us as individuals against abuse of power by authorities. Those are a couple of things that people can do, and I encourage people to just get involved, inform yourselves, go and tell your friends and family when this sort of thing happens and get them to start to care about this. Even if it's just one thing once a week, that would be plenty.
That was Justin Warren from Electronic Frontiers Australia. You can find out more about EFA by just, you know, putting them into your favourite search engine, Electronic Frontiers Australia. They've got a whole bunch of resources in terms of confronting some of this quite scary legislation. And just quickly on that, we didn't get an opportunity this morning to speak to Justin about the Trusted Digital Identity Bill 2021. Really amidst this acceleration in the shift to online services, the government has released the exposure draft of the Trusted Digital Identity Bill 2021, supposedly to improve the way Australians are able to verify their identity when accessing online services. But there are a whole bunch of concerns around this bill. And as I said, we didn't get a chance to talk to Justin about that. Rather, we focused very much on the quite frightening Identify and Disrupt bill. But you can find out more about all this stuff just by looking up Electronic Frontiers Australia. They've got a whole bunch of great resources, as I said. So definitely worth your time.
The OC is on Indie Media, RTR FM 92.1, The Sound Alternative. Now to some news. A damning new report reveals the scope of the humanitarian crisis unfolding at the US-Mexico border. Human Rights Watch uncovered over 160 harrowing reports of violent and sexual abuse faced by asylum seekers at the hands of the US immigration officials.
In more U.S. immigration news, a spokesperson for Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott says National Guard troops deployed to the southern border have helped Texas law enforcement officers detain over 7,700 migrants. They're among more than 70,000 asylum seekers who've been arrested by Texas law enforcement since Abbott launched the anti-immigration program Operation Lone Star back in March. In related news, the attorneys general of Texas and Missouri sued the Biden administration last Thursday in a bid to force the U.S. to resume border wall construction along the U.S.-Mexico border. Meanwhile, the group Human Rights First has tracked over 7,600 reports of kidnappings and other brutal attacks against asylum seekers who are blocked from applying for refuge in the U.S. or expelled under Title 42 since President Biden took office. Many of those barred under the Trump-era policy were Haitian asylum seekers.
And in medical and climate news, the British medical journal The Lancet warns in a new report that without dramatic action to curb greenhouse gas emissions, the climate crisis is on track to become the defining narrative of human health in the 21st century. The Lancet warns the spread of mosquito-borne diseases and growing mass migration due to flooding, drought, instead storms, wildfires and soil and water salinification.
And a new report by the People's Vaccine Alliance found that only about 260 million of the 1.8 billion COVID-19 vaccine donations promised to poorer nations by drug companies and wealthier countries have been delivered to date. That's just 14% of what was pledged. Gordon Brown, the World Health Organization's ambassador for global health financing, said rich countries are on pace to have almost a billion spare vaccines stockpiled by February.
A major leak of documents published by Greenpeace reveals how Brazil, Argentina, Australia, Japan, and Saudi Arabia tried to water down a key United Nations scientific report ahead of COP26 climate talks in Glasgow. In one comment, a senior Australian government official rejected the conclusion that coal-fired power plants should be phased out to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. This is John Chauvin, the executive director.
In Africa, the Ethiopian government launched two airstrikes in Tigray last Wednesday. Multiple civilians were treated for injuries. The strikes were not the first to hit the northern region last week as the conflict stretches toward one full year. Thousands have been killed and more than 2 million displaced amid a mounting humanitarian crisis.
In Brazil, a leaked draft of a Senate report accuses far-right President Jair Bolsonaro of multiple crimes related to his mishandling of the pandemic, saying he should be charged with crimes against humanity. The Senate investigation found he chose to let COVID-19 spread throughout the population in the hopes of choosing herd immunity. Brazil has recorded over 600,000 coronavirus deaths, and the report blames the Bolsonaro administration policies for over at least half of those.
And in Yemen, the UN is calling for a ceasefire in the city of Marib, where tens of thousands of civilians in need of medical care and other assistance are trapped as fighting intensifies between the Saudi-backed Yemeni forces and Houthi rebels to seize control of the city. The Saudi-led coalition said it recently killed at least 160 Houthi rebels in air raids. The UN also warned Yemen's economy is collapsing and its humanitarian crisis worsening, with more than 20 million Yemenis, or two-thirds of the population, in need of immediate humanitarian assistance. This comes as UNICEF is reporting at least 10,000 children have been killed or injured throughout the brutal war in Yemen. And that's about all we have time for on today's edition of the Indie Media Show. Thanks so much, Brent, for coming in.
Thanks for having me in again, Ray. It's good fun.
If you enjoyed the program, you can always restream it at rtrfm.com.au. It's also available as a podcast, and you can listen to a few of our individual interviews up on our SoundCloud. You can always get in touch with us via the RTRFM offices if you would like to suggest a story or get involved. We'd always appreciate you to get in contact.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?